SBS Audio is supported by advertising.
Why do people want to be at work? To feel heard, appreciated, part of something, and to know there's a career path for everyone. Inclusive workplaces are linked to increased innovation, productivity, and employee satisfaction. Make your organisation a place where people want to be. For inclusion and diversity training, visit inclusion-program.com.au.
You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
It is your daily 10-minute business and finance news wrap for this Thursday, the 18th of July, 2024. The Australian share market fell today. The S&P ASX 200 down 0.3%. We'll have the details with Matt Washer from Morningstar. But first, some economics news, where the latest unemployment data increases the chances of an August rate rise. That's as the jobless rate rose from 4% to 4.1% in June. To explain why and more, I spoke earlier with Alex Joiner, the chief economist at IMF Investors. Alex, the unemployment rate rose ever so slightly to 4.1%. The ABS has said that it's still tight. How would you describe the labour market?
I'd have to agree with the ABS. The Australian labour market with an unemployment rate at 4.1% is still relatively tight. It's loosening very, very gradually, but it's still able to generate a lot of jobs. And that's the key thing. So all in all, I'd characterise it as tight. The other thing you can look at is the unemployment rate by state. And all the mainland capitals still have an unemployment rate with a 3 in front of it. It's only Victoria that's at 4.5, dragging the national average up. So you would have to say that the unemployment rates in all the other state capitals apart from Victoria's is extremely low still.
Can we break down some of the numbers, right? First of all, while the unemployment rate rose, as you mentioned, so too did the participation rate to 66.9%. What's the significance of having that participation rate at a near record high?
Yeah, the participation rate reflects how many people in the economy would like a job, whether they have one or not. And to my mind, the participation rate edging upwards in trend terms is reflective most likely of cost of living pressures. So households that are facing cost of living pressures need a little bit more income. So a second or third person in that household might go out and get a job. They're doing this mostly in part-time work, even though we had a strong full-time number in June. Over the past year, invariably, it's been in part-time work. And that just adds a little bit to the household budget and helps people overcome those cost of living pressures.
The number of people who found work rose despite that unemployment rate rising. So more than 50,000 people found work. I think total employment is now at a record. But what role is population growth playing here?
Yeah, so the increase in employment was 50,000. We've got about 14.4 million people employed in the Australian economy, and that's great. The employment to population ratio is high. So you've got a lot of people working to produce GDP, which is a good thing. Population growth adds to that because our population growth invariably comes from migration. So people that are coming here with skills and adding to our economy, or it is also coming from younger cohorts, sort of this 15 to 24 year old cohort, which sort of is a bump in the demographic data because of the baby bonus that we saw in 2004. And those people are also coming into the workforce and adding to the productive capacity of the economy. And that's a good thing. The more people in your economy that are working, the more people that pay tax and the more revenue the government gets to provide the services that we need for our population growth.
So we've gone through a lot of the positives in this report, but are there any signs of a loosening in the labour market?
There are some of the survey data that we look at. You know, this is the NAB survey, the Westpac survey, showing signs that businesses are ever so slightly pulling back on their hiring intentions. We see the same thing in labour demanding indicators, and these are mostly job ad series, so you know, the listed job ads on the internet. They've come down quite a bit, but they're still on a historical basis quite high. As what we saw in the aftermath of the pandemic is that the amount of job ads really spiked, and it's coming down from those peaks, but there are still a lot of job ads out there. It's just matching those skills up to the people that want the jobs. So we would expect on these indicators that things would slow down a little bit. It's notable that most of these indicators are in the private sectors of the economy and not really the public or government aligned sectors. And we know that healthcare, education, public administration are all areas where jobs growth has been unusually strong. And that's structural, not really reflecting the weakness in the economy. And that's the way that we've been able to keep churning out some pretty impressive employment growth figures.
This report from the ABS today, to what extent does it really reflect the real world? For example, doesn't the labour market lag the real economy? And then we see lots of headlines of job losses throughout the economy. I mean, we've just seen Fortescue say that 700 jobs will go yesterday. How does that all match up?
Most economic data are lagging. It takes the ABS time to count the numbers. So it's important to monitor those headlines. But usually the headlines are high profile and relatively small numbers. 700 jobs lost is not a good thing, but there's 14.4 million jobs in the Australian economy. I think what we need to worry about is if we see more of those stories where people are losing their jobs, and that becomes increasingly broad-based. And that will be an interesting lead indicator, although anecdotal, into what labour market figures might hold for us in coming months.
So finally, in wrapping all this up, what's it likely to mean for the Reserve Bank? Because if it wanted to lift interest rates, does this report allow it to do so and why?
Well, the labour market tightness, the unemployment rate at 4.1%, this is all in line with the RBA's expectations. Now, 4.1% is not too far away from where the RBA expects the unemployment rate to peak in this cycle. 4.3% is where their forecast is at. And it is cognizant that it wants to hold on to labour market gains. But putting 50,000 extra people to work, having high employment to population ratios, high participation ratios, these are all things that the RBA would want to see. And this is not an impediment for them to raise rates if inflation demands. And we'll find out more about that, importantly, on the 31st of July when the Q2 inflation figures are released.
That's Alex Joiner there from IMF Investors.
Need a few minutes to reset? Great Minds is a podcast from SBS that guides you through different meditation styles from around the world. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
SBS is Australia's most trusted multilingual broadcaster. Our listeners are loyal, highly engaged, and have supported countless local businesses. We offer advertising packages for businesses of all sizes. Our experienced sales team will guide you through the process of owning a great campaign. Bring your own ad or have our production team make you something in one of our 68 languages. Start the conversation with your new audience today. Email sales@sbs.com.au.
Now, Market Day on the SBS On The Money podcast.
The Australian share market fell today. The S&P ASX 200 off 0.3% to 8,036. For more, I spoke with Matt Washer, the Chief Investment Officer at Morningstar. Matt, can we start with the jobs numbers released today by the ABS? Does the market think that these adds to the case for a rate rise in August and why?
Yeah, well, the market really does think that the probabilities are increasing, especially after some strong job numbers today, the probabilities are increasing that maybe August is going to be an interest rate hike from the RBA. The jobs number is really going to put some pressure on inflation, especially if that flows through to wages. They've seemed to be quite strong at face value. But if you look at a couple of the other numbers out there, consumer confidence, it's still a little bit weak. Growth numbers, there's nothing flash there. And if they start to, be a bit of counterbalance to these strong job numbers, I think what that means is that the RBA is in a bit of a bind at this stage. It's going to be a tough path for them.
How is this all at odds with what's happening with the rest of the world? Because while we're talking about the potential of rate rises, the rest of the world cuts.
Yeah, that's certainly the case. I mean, I think the RBA, as I said, they're going to be quite torn on whether to raise rates, because not only is there some weaker numbers out there, but everyone else is starting to look at cutting rates. Europe's already cut rates. The US, you know, rate cuts are priced in. There could be potentially 3 rate cuts this year. And so that will not only put pressure on, you know, the RBA to maybe take pause and think that there's a bit of a lag in some of the inflation numbers we have, but it'll also put a lot of upward pressure on the Aussie dollar. And that could also start to impact inflation and bring things down if we're kind of diametrically opposed to some of our biggest trading partners.
Can you put a lot of that more into more context when we talk about the markets, right? These different moves in interest rate expectations around the world, how is that being reflected on the Australian share market? Because yesterday we were at a record, today we're a bit softer. I know there's other moves, but in general, what's going on here?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, the interest rate moves up, down, you know, I think that's a little bit of noise. I mean, I think if we look at the markets today, in Australia, yes, they've come off a little bit, but that's probably really following the US market lower overnight, where the tech sector, in particular, you know, the semiconductor sector came off quite significantly last night. Now, that's a sector that includes NVIDIA. NVIDIA was down 7% last night. ASML, the Dutch semiconductor company, was down about 10%. Now, this is a sector that's done really well over the past 18 months. So I'm talking it's been up hundreds of percent. NVIDIA's near 300-400% over the last 18 months. And so it's probably been priced for perfection on the back of that AI theme. But what we saw last night was that former President Trump, he'd sent some shockwaves through the sector when he said the US might not defend Taiwan if he was president again. And Taiwan's semiconductor that produces the actual chips for all these companies, it's the biggest semiconductor manufacturer in the world. It was hit. All of these names were hit. Now, the bar was very high for these companies. And so any slight bad news was bound to cause issues, you know, just because they're priced to perfection. But we think that you know, we're reasonably constructive on other parts of the market.
You mentioned Trump there. Obviously, one of the big events for the market will be this US federal election in November. What kind of an impact do you think it'll have?
Look, if you look back, we've sliced and diced the numbers. We've done a fair bit of work on whether there's any patterns there to take advantage of in US elections, or any elections for that matter. And as I say, we've sliced and diced the numbers, and you can show over different time periods, different occasions, that the Democrats are going to be great for the markets and the markets will go up, or the Republicans will fall, or the vice versa. We think it's really just noise. But certainly if Trump is elected, you know, there'll be tax cuts, there'll be stimulatory, you know, that could offset, you know, be offset by higher inflation and subsequently higher rates again. There could be a bit of a turnaround there. The key point is it's really hard to understand the impact, because, you know, anything could happen. Other events, you know, the vaccine was released after the last election. So who knows whether that was, you know, the markets heading up was the vaccine or Biden being elected. My view would be, you know, stay invested and try and block out the noise, because, you know, some of these things you don't want to chop and change your positioning.
And given what we know right now, where do you see the opportunities for investors at the moment?
Yeah, I'll talk in broad market terms. I think Australian equities, you know, they're generally about fairly priced, we would say. I think the US, you know, I spoke about the semiconductor sector. The US is pretty bifurcated. Everyone would have heard about the Magnificent Seven, anyone that listens to the markets. You know, they've had a really great run. You know, they're probably expensive, and they've earned to be expensive because they've had such great earnings. But small caps are much cheaper in the US, and we've actually seen that trade start to unwind a little bit. You know, it's large caps starting to fall a bit, and small caps really are up about 10% in the US over the last week, which is a bit of an amazing turnaround. So we think small caps, there's still a way to play there in US small caps. And the UK, you know, there's some tailwinds, a new prime minister, new government, potentially closer ties to Europe. So there's potential opportunities there. But I guess where we're you know, we're casting a wider net. We're looking at emerging markets, particularly some areas in Latin America. Brazil's come off a bit. Mexico's pretty high quality. And China tech names, some of those big China tech companies, you know, they're pretty cheap and pretty high quality companies with that are very well run at this point in time. So as I say, we're casting a wide net there, and that's kind of where we think some of the opportunities are globally.
Matt Washer there from Morningstar.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.